If there is one message I keep hitting myself over the head with right now, it's slow down. My mind has a tendency to anxiously race to the point where I'm not even really experiencing the present moment. And yet, when I do, when I'm able to quiet the noise and really be present, it's almost ridiculous the joy that results, which is why I'm so delighted to share this conversation with photographer, recipe developer, and now cookbook author Muriel Banakisa with you. Her new plant-based cookbook is called Savoring, and it's a love letter to the act of cooking and eating and all of the pleasures that await. Hello, friends. My name is Desiree Nielsen, and you are listening to the All Sorts podcast. This is the house of pleasurable wellness, of actionable, evidence-based nutrition, and of celebrating the joys of food. Because if wellness doesn't make you feel good, what's the point? Today, I am talking with the charming Muriel Banakisa all about her journey from business major to food photographer and how she advocates for reprioritizing the act of cooking in our lives. We talk about her favorite vegan spots in her hometown of Montreal, why cooking is one of the best ways to romanticize your life, and how she finally learned to face her fear of yeasted breads. And before we get started, a wee reminder to pre-order your copy of my newest book, Plant Magic. The photography is gorgeous and it's filled with super approachable, nourishing, and full of flavor recipes that everyone, even the plant skeptic in your life, will love. Now let's dive into today's conversation with Muriel. Muriel, thank you so much for joining us on the All Sorts podcast. And I am so excited for everyone to see your beautiful new book, Savoring.
Oh, thank you so much, Desiree, for having me. It's really an honor.
So for those of us who are new to your work, like, how did you find your path in food?
Honestly, it's been quite a journey. I've always had a certain attraction to food. So in the book, I talk a little bit of my story. So I grew up in the Republic of Congo. When I was still living there until the age of 8, every Sunday, my family would have like these gatherings where we had like friends from church would come together and everyone would bring food kind of like potluck style. And even back then for me, it was like some of my favorite memories, just seeing all this food, all these colors, all these textures. And then when my family immigrated here to Montreal, that's when I was 8 at that point. And a couple years later, I started just experimenting with food. I was always fascinated watching my mom in the kitchen, like, cook. And then I started just trying out recipes I found in books, online. And slowly but surely, this passion kind of grew. And then I fell in love with photography. And I figured, you know, how can I just put these two together? And then when I graduated from university, I studied international business and marketing, so not really related to food at all. That's when I just decided, why not give this a shot and start kind of my career as a food photographer. And from there, it was just photography initially. And then I started offering like recipe development services. I started sharing recipes on my blog that I created. And it's really like, you know, in French, there's this expression, de fil en aiguille. So it's like from one thing after the other just led me to where I am today. We were saying this a little bit before, but I'm still in awe that I'm here. I feel very blessed that I just had this opportunity to find a passion so early on in life and be able to transform it into a career. And now writing a cookbook and sharing my recipes with the world is just, yeah, a blessing.
It's amazing. You know, it's funny that you said that marketing has nothing to do, because at doing this kind of work, oh my gosh, do I wish I had some semblance of a marketing education, because I find that's the hardest part when you are creative and you want to make these things and put them out into the world. I think for a lot of us, the hardest part is then getting out into the world and saying, hey, mm-hmm. I did this thing.
Oh, yeah. And like, even with the education, like, it was really awkward for me. Like, and it still is, you know, like before this, I was like, my heart was racing a little bit. Like, you know, I'm still not like super comfortable doing all this stuff. But, you know, the more you do it, the more comfortable you get. Yeah, I remember like when I had to record myself like talking to the camera on Instagram for the first time, the number of times I had to redo that video, hilarious.
I think the people who view these things and scroll through these things, look at them and are like, oh, this seems really easy. And for anyone who's doing it, you're like, no, like you overthink it so much and you do 25 takes for 30 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, oh, I don't know if it's okay.
Yeah, then like you look at yourself, you're like, oh my God, why am I making this face? Like, why are my eyebrows doing this?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit because you talked about your mother cooking when you moved to Montreal. And was she the kind of cook where she taught you to cook alongside her? Or was she the kind of like, because this was her kitchen and her way of cooking, that it was more like you watch, but you don't? Because my grandmother was this, you know, iconic, very matriarchal, like cook. Mm-hmm. And so like my mother wasn't allowed in the kitchen. She let me in the kitchen.
Really?
But like when my mom was growing up, she didn't let her in the kitchen. So I was just wondering, like, did you cook alongside your mom or?
I did. I mean, my mom is like the type of parent who is very kind of open and just like kind of lets the kids figure out what they want to do. So she always, like, the door was always open and I, you know, I stepped in here and there. But I feel like when I really started cooking alongside my mom was more during like Christmas gatherings, like, you know, when we would plan the holiday menus, it was something that we'd really do together. And it was so much easier just being two prepping these meals because there's so much food. But that's kind of where, like, when I think back of the memory of me cooking with my mom, it's really what I have in mind is those, the Christmas dinners and New Year's Eve dinners.
Yeah. And what were mealtimes like growing up for you? You know, was it, you know, very quick and everybody was, you know, doing their things and then coming together quickly for dinner? Or were mealtimes something that like you all really sort of like took your time and gathered around?
It was really more the second thing. It was, my mom really made it a point to have us all like sit down for dinner and be together. Like I didn't grow up with TV dinners at all. We would always have dinner around the table and talk about our day. And my mom also was the type of cook who always made sure that the meals were well balanced. So like she always tried to have like protein and then carbs and then vegetables. And that's kind of something too that I took with me later on, like once I transitioned to veganism, to reintegrate that, because I wasn't vegan. I didn't grow up vegan. But yeah, it was kind of like that. And, you know, especially the maybe dinners on the weekend, those dinners would tend to be a little bit longer, would just enjoy, talk for longer, have some tea, dessert. Yeah, very fond memories of those days.
Yeah. And what kind of, like, what were some of like your favorite meals and favorite flavors growing up? Especially because you are now, and I want to talk about that a little bit later too, because you are now vegan, but that you didn't grow up that way. So what were some of the like the dishes and the flavors that you like really, really loved?
Yeah, so when I was thinking about this, I remembered this dish that my mom used to make that was like one of our favorites. She would make this spaghetti lasagna. So she would make this like super elaborate spaghetti sauce with like tons of vegetables, like lots of onion and carrot, celery. Like it was really a robust spaghetti sauce. And then she would cook the spaghetti and then toss the spaghetti in the sauce and then like layer, you know, lasagna sheets, spaghetti with the sauce on top, another lasagna sheet, cheese, and then kind of do these lasagna layers. But in between, it was actually like spaghetti. And it's very weird when you think of it.
It's amazing. Like, are you kidding me? Like double carb. Yes, please.
Yeah. Like it was quite out there. But that was one of those dishes that my mom used to make that was always like comfort food to me. And then outside of that, of course, like when she started cooking here in Canada, that's when she introduced more of the recipes she grew up with. So my mom is originally of Russian descent, but she grew up her entire life in Ukraine. So there's a lot of dishes from Ukraine and Russia that we kind of grew up eating. And many of these recipes I actually feature in my book. So things like the borscht, the pampushki, different salads. Yeah, so those are, I think, synonymous with my childhood. And then another thing is like breakfast. So my mom was like on Saturdays, she would always make like her special breakfast. So usually it was either like crepes, so French crepes, the thin ones, or French toast, or sometimes it was really simple, just like bread with butter and cheese. But it was like, it felt really special to have these moments on Saturday mornings where we could just like get together and enjoy these foods.
Yeah. And just having the opportunity, you know, as a parent, but also as a dietitian, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm dragging my family to the table, but it's just so critical. you know, particularly as we get more distracted and as life moves at a faster pace, like perhaps dinner time is the only time we're all sitting. Like there's one of these, you know, movies that me and my kids love watching. It's called Mitchells versus the Machines. And, you know, it, for anyone who's seen it, you know, is that the first part in the where the dad is like, I want us to put all of our devices down and have unobstructed eye contact. And how everyone is just struggling, you know? And it's, you know, yeah. If that 20 minutes is the only time that we get to sit down completely mm-hmm. free of distraction and reconnect with each other, like it's just so powerful. And we have so much like research too to show how like mm-hmm. eating dinner with your kids and sitting around the table is so important, not only for like our actual like physical health, but like our mental health and mm-hmm. our relationships too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And these are habits too that then your kids can bring into their lives as they get older and create these type of traditions with their friends and families. I think it's so powerful and important. I completely agree with you.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that I love so much about your book, because we have more vegan and plant-based cookbooks than ever before, you know, because people are really embracing this idea of eating more plants. But I love how you focus on that idea of slowing down and savoring and not just the meal itself, which is super important, but also the act of cooking. The mm-hmm. idea that we, you know, and some of us don't have time. Some of us, you know, are single parents and, you know, of they course, have two yeah. jobs and they don't have a lot of time. But for others, it's more of this idea of priorities. So it's like, how much time mm-hmm. did you spend scrolling or streaming? Versus could you take 30 or 40 minutes to enjoy mm-hmm. the process of cooking? Like what is that like for you? Like, how did you sort of find that awareness of like, oh, aha, like this time that I'm spending in the kitchen is actually like really beautiful and like really tactile.
Yeah. And I think it's like many other people, like I also fall in the group of people who are distracted, you know, like it's so easy to be, right? Like we always have our phones. There's always so many reels to watch and interesting information to learn. And there are many things. Like I'm a person, I love to listen to audiobooks, for example. And like oftentimes I just have audiobooks in my ears and I'm just like going around, like multitasking, doing all these things. And at some point I just realized like, yeah, just take off the books, like focus on one thing and just be present. And for me, like how this process of enjoying the process of cooking came from looking forward to the weekend and having more time to cook more elaborate meals. And I've always loved like on Friday nights, kind of like Googling or researching in the books that I have, what am I going to make this weekend? So, and then like once I find the recipes I'm going to make, then I kind of make the list of things that I need to purchase. I go out and I purchase those things. And I make it a point when I do take the time to cook these dishes to really be in the present moment and just to slow down and be aware, not like, you know, have my phone and like my iPad open at the same time, listening to books or, you know, having a lot of things going on, because I find that kind of takes you out of the present moment as opposed to just really being there and kind of going through every step. One thing I find is very helpful to do that is to first read through all the recipe. I don't do this all the time, but I find that that's one of the great ways to just really know kind of like what's coming up ahead and not feel like frazzled when you're in the middle of cooking, you know, something. So like prepare your ingredients beforehand, like measure it if you can, and then kind of follow the instructions as you go while already, because you've read the recipe, you know kind of what's coming up ahead. And that's been one of the ways for me to just be in the present moment when I cook.
And also a major, you know, like bump for cookbooks themselves, because if you are cooking from a cookbook, your phone can be in the other room,
yes.
you know, and as a blogger, you know, I also want you to get your recipes from the internet, of course, but you mm-hmm. know, that idea that like when all you have with you is the food and the book, like mm-hmm. it does remove distractions. I also find because I have a little bit of a restless mind, music really helps for me.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If I pop some music on, then it's like enough background mm-hmm. to like, yeah. I'm a little bit engaged. My brain's a little bit engaged, but it's not like hearing like a podcast or an audiobook. And then I'm like, okay, yeah. we're getting into this now.
And it really creates kind of like an event almost out of cooking, right? Like you can have a glass of wine if you want, or kombucha or lemon water, whatever you want. But like it's to create this intentional moment and this whole atmosphere. You know, there's like this term on social media that's been like very in lately is like romanticize your life.
Yeah.
And I find like cooking is like a great way to romanticize your life because it is an act of love. You know, I talk about this in the book, like to cook for yourself or for others is a way to show love. And I think we should really try to celebrate that as much as possible. And sometimes you don't have to cook very complex dishes that take hours. It could be like a 30-minute meal, but still being present while you do it.
Yeah, I love that. And I also love that you offered, because if someone listening to this is like, well, I just know, like my life is too busy and I have a hard time cooking, and doing it on the weekend and saying like either Saturday night or Sunday night and say, okay, so we're not going to do this 7 days a week, but can we get into this like beautiful ritual of like one slowed down meal a week where, yeah, you look through your books, you go to the store, you put on that music, you pour yourself a little drink, and then, yeah, really enjoy, yeah, savor. I mean, I love that your book is called Savoring, because I find myself wanting to say that so many times. Like, really, like, getting into the juice of, like, this is such a beautiful thing where I'm not distracted by all of the outside world. Like, I'm just in this moment.
Yeah. And I find then in that way, you're also able to kind of like pick up on how your food is changing, right? As you're preparing it, like you'll be probably more likely to taste your food as you go, to adjust the seasonings a little bit, to kind of tweak it so that it fits your own flavor preferences. And I think that's also something that I try to encourage people to do, because I like my food to taste a certain way, but doesn't mean that you like your food to taste exactly the same way. And by being present and in the moment, you can really adapt it to you and your own preferences.
Yeah. And I love that you shared that, because I think oftentimes when people are a little bit less confident in the kitchen, you know, they look at that recipe as if it is set in stone. I mean, I contrast that also to the people, you know, like I'll get comments where, oh, I changed this, that, like I changed like seven things in your recipe, it didn't work and your recipe is terrible. So it's like, not quite that. But you know, if it calls for cauliflower, but you have broccoli, like those little swaps, or I'm finding this a bit bland, maybe I'm going to double the cumin, like those little things where you really let your own taste buds be the guide, like I think are so important as you're developing those skills as a cook.
Absolutely. And like my mom taught me, like she's the ultimate teacher. My mom is kind of like what you, well, not in the leaving bad comments after modifying everything, but the type of cook who's going to be like, okay, we're going to make spaghetti. Okay, we don't have pasta. So like we'll find something else. We don't have tomatoes. I mean, I'm kind of exaggerating, but you see the point, right? To really modify things. And initially when I started cooking, I really wasn't like that. I was like, mom, this is the recipe. Like we can't change anything. We cannot do it. But, you know, kind of going back to what you were saying, like with time, as you're kind of sharpening those cooking skills, you start to see how things kind of work and you're able to adapt recipes a little bit more to you and your flavors, your preferences, your skills, all that.
Yeah. And I think when you're starting out, it could be as simple as like, oh, this needs more salt. You know, like if there was not enough salt, or if you're looking at the salt and thinking, especially because I love salt so much, so I'm always really like conscious of it when I'm developing a recipe, that like maybe I choose too much salt for you. And if you cut it in half, you can always add more, but maybe your taste buds don't like as much salt as mine. And, you know, it's those tiny little ways that you can really make something so delicious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you do the work you do, and because, you know, this book is all about sort of like taking your time and cooking these meals, I also have to ask you, like in a very real world sense, like what are your favorite things to cook midweek, like on a busy, like Tuesday or Wednesday? Like how are you changing how you like to cook, or like what are some of your go-to back pocket recipes?
Yeah, and I find for me, those recipes kind of tend to change like from season to season, and even sometimes from year to year. But lately, in the past, I would say 6 months, I've really been into like homemade ramen and homemade poke bowls. I find their recipes that are like, they're great blank canvases, because you really can adapt them to whatever you have in your fridge. So for example, like my ramen, I make my own broth with like a bouillon concentrate. And then I add like tamari, rice vinegar, sesame oil, things like that to kind of develop more of that flavor. And then I cook the ramen in it. I add like frozen vegetables if I have them. And then on the side, I'll have like chopped cabbage, because I always have chopped cabbage in the fridge, other vegetables that I find. And then I have like silken tofu for a bit of protein. And I put it all together in a bowl, add some seaweed, chili oil, sesame seeds. It's very simple. Honestly, it comes together in like maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes, but it's really, really good. And then depending on what I have in the fridge, I just kind of adapt it. And then with poke bowls, what I love about them is the fact that you can like batch cook a bunch of like, you know, sticky rice and then tofu or tempeh or even beans. And then like throughout the week, you kind of switch out the ingredients that you add to it. So like you can have avocado, like pickled vegetables, fermented vegetables. You can saute like plantains. I love fried plantains in poke bowls. It's like one of those things. It's very different, but it's so good. It adds a nice like sweetness and richness to poke bowls. So that's kind of what I've been leaning towards lately.
Yes. Well, now, I love plantain. Oh my God, fried plantains are like so delicious. They're so comforting.
They are.
They're amazing. Yeah. But this is probably a good time to talk then, you know, because you didn't grow up, you know, eating a vegan diet. Like, what was that transition like for you? So like, what sort of inspired you to go vegan? And then how did you sort of look at like what you were eating and what you were cooking? Like, how did you actually go about making that transition?
Yeah, it was quite drastic in a sense. Like, I honestly never, ever thought I was going to be vegan. Like, I used to eat so much like salami, charcuterie meats, like cheese, like tons, quantities of them. And then what happened is that I watched the documentary Earthlings. And that documentary is all about, you know, industrial farming and how the animals are treated in factory farms. And it just broke my heart. And I watched that documentary and I thought, I have to change. I can't continue supporting this. And at the time, I knew no one who was vegan. Like, I didn't have a friend who was vegan. My husband's mom is vegetarian, but that's still, you know, like, you can eat eggs and fish. Yeah. So it's still many big groups that are included in that diet. And so I had to kind of turn to the internet. And that's what I did. I just went on the internet and started looking at different recipe creators. Initially, you know, back then, this was 7 years ago about, people like The Minimalist Baker and even Laura Wright from The First Mess were the first people I kind of turned to try their recipes and just to learn the basics. Because although my mom incorporated like legumes, it wasn't like a huge part of what we ate. So I had to really learn how to cook with that. I had to learn how to eat enough. That was a struggle. That was big. Like, when I made the transition, I didn't realize how much more I had to eat. So I would find myself hungry a lot of the time. And, you know, back then, like, there were even fewer like alternatives, you know, like things like vegan sausage that, you know, have extra protein, can fill up your meals. So you had to kind of like make more beans or eat more tofu. And so that was a learning curve. But, you know, like anything, slowly but surely, I found something that worked for me. And because I'm a very curious cook, I had a lot of fun just trying out new recipes and trying out. Initially, it was really just kind of replicating the recipes of others, just because I didn't know how to go about it myself. And then after with time, I started like recreating recipes I grew up eating and trying out new recipes entirely.
Yeah. I love that you said that you had to learn how to eat enough, because I think, you know, especially putting on my dietitian hat, it's one of the, like, you can eat like a tiny amount of charcuterie, like, you know, some sausages and some cheese, and it's so small and you're like, oh, I'm full, because you don't realize how rich those foods are. Whereas when you switch and you're now like, you know, having legumes or any, like, they're just not as rich, they're not as dense, and you do actually need to eat a larger volume of food to stay as, I mean, unless all you're doing is eating cashew cheese all day, which, I mean, it's a good life choice. I'm fully behind it. But, like, you know, like, you do actually need to eat a little bit more.
Yeah, you definitely do. And I I'm a person, I have headaches whenever I don't eat enough. And I remember in the early days, I tend to have a lot of headaches. And I was like, what is going on? Like, I feel like I'm constantly eating and yet I'm never full, kind of, in a way. But yeah, it is something I always tell people who think about going vegan or kind of have questions, is really make sure you eat enough. And, you know, there are tools out there where you can kind of input what you're eating in the day, like Chronometer is one of them. I find it so useful because you can actually see, okay, like I've eaten this amount of protein and this many calories and this vitamin or whatever it is. And it's kind of a good way to keep on track to hitting your nutritional needs.
Yeah, it's a great little check-in every once in a while, because then you can be like, oh, like I am totally like crushing it on protein, or like, oh, I've had no calcium for 3 days. maybe my bones need some soy milk.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's talk a little bit about the recipes you grew up with, because I love the selection of recipes in savoring is so vast. You know, it's everything from, you know, some like things that are very much trendy and like right now. And then of course, with, you know, your background and then your mom's background, like there's such a beautiful variety of recipes. What were some of the recipes that you were like, I just have to learn to veganize this? Like, this one is so important to me, I need to make sure that I figure it out.
I think the one that is the biggest one is the tiramisu, actually, funnily enough, because the other recipes, like the more like Russian and Ukrainian recipes or the African recipes, I had already veganized them, or my family had veganized them quite a while ago, because it was something I was craving. Like, for example, my mom's borscht is something like, I can't live without borscht. It's so good. So that was already kind of in the works. Whereas like the vegan tiramisu, I used to love making tiramisu. It's one of my favorite desserts of all time. And I just wanted to have a vegan tiramisu in the cookbook. And it took me so many tries. Like, I've made that cake probably over a dozen times because it just wasn't quite right. So yeah, a lot of trial and error for that one. But that would be the recipe.
Yeah. See, this is what you and I have in common, both that it's our favorite dessert. Tiramisu is my favorite dessert ever. And we have a local restaurant here that does a really beautiful cashew tiramisu. So I was like, I have to figure this out myself. And so in Plant Magic, there's also so we could do the tiramisu.
Oh, yes. Yes. I want to try yours. I mean, there's never enough tiramisu in my life, to be honest. Like, too much, I should say. There's never too much tiramisu.
Yeah,
in my life.
Yeah. I mean, never enough, and also never too much. Like, yes. More tiramisu the better.
Yes.
So I want to ask you, because one of the things that I think people would be surprised about with me is that even though I cook for a living, I tend to be a really skittish entertainer. Like, when people are coming over, I feel so much pressure that I always default to like surprisingly simple foods. Like, I will just make a big pasta for people to come over, as opposed to like these elaborate dishes. So like, what about you? Are you a more casual, like easy entertainer, or do you just like your weekend meals? Like, do you sort of relish the idea of like planning and prepping and hosting?
I think I'm like somewhere in between that. I think one of the things that kind of scares me in like cooking for others, even like people that I know and love, is I'm never fully sure that they'll actually like it because of their own food preferences. You know, like, because, you know, there's always like one person who doesn't like mushrooms or a person who doesn't like olives. So that always kind of makes me a bit worried about cooking for crowds, especially when there's like many different dishes. But as I said before, like, for me, the holidays is when I go like all in, because I know who I'm cooking for. I know what are the dishes that people like. And so it's easy. But whenever it's kind of like more like dinner parties with like my family, friends, I'm kind of in between. I like sometimes like the, you know, those dishes that, you know, everyone loves. Those are kind of like my go-to, like the pasta dishes, as you mentioned. But once in a while, I like to throw in something a bit more fun. I find dessert is kind of a good place for that, because most people like generally most desserts, like, yeah, people don't tend to be as picky for desserts. So like, that's when I'll, you know, have like a cinnamon bun with like a fun, like rum twist, for example. That's kind of my strategy.
Yeah. And I think one thing for me, because I am a skittish entertainer, dessert you can fully have made and prepped in advance too, yes. You know, like you can like make it in the morning, yes. And you're not worried when people are coming over about like.
That's true. Like that's a very good point about keeping food warm. I'm never fully sure like when to like start or fit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I struggle with that.
The timing of a meal is one of the most challenging. And in the during the holidays, that's definitely something where I'm like, I've got like schedules. I'm like 3 p.m. do this and like 3:30 do this because I like to actually get it all ready at the same time is a little bit of a feat in and of itself.
It is. I mean, do you cook everything by yourself or do you have help? Because I find having help helps a lot.
Yeah. So we host now that I have kids, I host at Christmas time. And so I do have, you know, like help. I can bring people in to chop, but my kitchen is also so small that I tend to do a lot of it by myself because once there's two people in here, like we're already bumping into each other.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It is a lot. But yeah, having a little bit of chopping help and then like things that you can do the day before. So yeah, day before like set up because I typically do like a Wellington. And so like the filling I do the day before. So that's just like in the fridge, ready to go.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah, prepping in advance. I start my cooking like the 22nd. So that it's like gradual so that we're not spending the whole of the 24th like cooking in the kitchen.
Yeah. You mentioned a little bit a while ago about a bouillon concentrate. Do you use Better Than Bouillon in your cooking?
Yes.
Yes. It is. Seriously, anyone listening to this who is not using this product, it is completely I would love for them to sponsor me because I buy it by the truckload. It's this bouillon concentrate. Why don't you say what Better Than Bouillon is?
Yeah, it's kind of like this paste that you keep in the fridge that you dilute in hot water. And so instead of buying cartons of vegetable broth and storing it, taking a lot of space in your kitchen, having the concentrate and you use as little or as much as you want. And then if you want a more strong bouillon, you just add more tablespoons of it. It's great. I buy tons of it too.
I just find that it's so much, particularly if you are trying to build that sort of richness and umami that, you know, instantly you're going to get if you're cooking meat or dairy. Like, I think it really helps like build a bridge between that sort of like that richness and savoriness of animal-based foods when you're making plant-based meals.
Yeah, it's really good. It's a must, definitely, in my kitchen.
What other pantry things do you find to be essential?
For me, tamari is a big one. It's a big one. I used to cook with soy sauce and I still have it and I cook with it from time to time. But I find tamari is just that much better. It's kind of like gluten-free soy sauce, but it's not just that. The flavor of it is a little bit different. It's a bit more savory, umami. It's stronger. It's just beautiful. Every time, like, let's say we go out of the city to like my husband's parents' cottage, I bring this with me because I know I will be able to cook something delicious with it. It's a staple. I buy a lot of it too. I also, nutritional yeast. I mean, it's a must. Yeah. Just for that cheesy flavor in anything that you're cooking, I always have a lot of it. It's nice too, because here in Montreal, there's a lot of zero waste stores that carry it in bulk and the price is actually so much better than like just buying it at a grocery store. That would be that. And then the combination of all-purpose flour and yeast, because I just love yeasted things. So like breads and brioches and like babkas, all that. I used to be so afraid of yeast because I had so many doughs that failed when I was growing up. And then a couple of years ago, I told myself, Muriel, no, you're going to master this. Like it's enough is enough. And ever since, I've just been in love. I love making like pretzel bites, you know, even like on a weeknight, like it's very easy to put together. Brioche, like cinnamon buns are, I mean, a must. So yeah, I think those would be it.
Cinnamon buns are still something I have never made from scratch.
What?
I know. I'll fix this. I'll fix this with your recipes.
You must. The dough I have on my site. So I have a few bun recipes on my site. And there's a dough, kind of like the same dough that comes back in those different recipes. Mm-hmm. It is really good. It works every time. It's fluffy. It's soft. Yeah. I highly recommend it. I always go on my site to remake this though. So yeah, I've tested it many times.
Amazing. Yeah. I don't know why. Again, I think like your fear of yeast, I have this idea in my head that like I'm not a baker. Like obviously like I make cookies and muffins. Like, I do bake things, but like I'm not like a baker. So yeah, I think cinnamon buns have always been like, well, that's for bakers. Like bakers make cinnamon buns. I don't.
No, you can do it. And I think one of the things for me that really helped kind of overcome that fear is instead of using just active yeast, you buy the instant packs. Mm. And so that decreases the amount of time you have to let your dough rise. And for me, it's been a game changer. It works every time. I have never had a dough that doesn't rise it's been about 5 years I've been on this yeast journey. So yeah, it works. It works really well.
That's such a good tip. Okay. So instant yeast, not just like the regular.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it still looks like the packet is exactly the same. Yeah. It just says instant on it.
Amazing. Okay. I want to put you on the spot a little bit just because you're from Montreal, and I would love to know, because I hear that there are so many wonderful vegan places to eat in Montreal these days. So if someone were to find themselves in Montreal, where would you recommend they eat?
Number one, the best one above everything. I mean, there are really good ones, but this one is like amazing. It's called Sushi Momo. So it's a sushi restaurant here in Montreal, entirely plant-based, and it is incredible. The flavors that they're able to create without any animal products are beyond this world. It is so good. And their sushis are really like developed. They have many ingredients in them, many layers. They're really big on using different sauces to kind of bring out the flavors of other ingredients. My brother and his girlfriend actually just went there for her birthday last night. And he was like, Muriel, my brother's not vegan. He said, Muriel, this place is divine. It is the best restaurant in Montreal. So this one is an absolute must. We served their sushis at our wedding this past September. Mm-hmm. And everyone who was there was like, oh my God, how did I not know of this place? It's so good. So this would be the first one. Mm-hmm. And then second one, which is really close, it's a place called Café di Campi. Mm. So they're an Italian cafe that serves lots of different baked goods. So they have like different cornetos with also like, you know, the almond filling. They have this panettone that they make during the holiday season. They make all these different tarts and brioche. Like they have like this pistachio brioche. It's really good. And they vary kind of their offerings from week to week, but it is really good. And what's really interesting is they never write that this place is vegan. Like if you were to step into the cafe, you'd have no idea that it's vegan. And even like at first I was like, is this actually vegan? Because it doesn't taste vegan at all. But this is, it's my favorite cafe here in Montreal by far.
Oh, I love that. We have, you might know Erin Ireland, but she has a bakery in our neighborhood. I live like 5 blocks from there. So it's the same thing. I think people have this idea in their mind that vegan food tastes a certain way. And like maybe in the 90s, you know, when we didn't have the knowledge of like things like cashew creams, for example, like, you know, maybe everything tasted like, you know, a hippie made it, a hippie with only so-so food experience. But like when you walk into these places and you're like, no, this is just delicious food. It happens to be vegan, but like, no matter who you are, like you're going to love this. I love that.
Absolutely. And I mean, Erin Ireland's bakery, like my friend Elizabeth from Vancouver with Love, she always is going there. And I'm like, girl, can you stop sharing about this in your stories? Because I'm so jealous. Although we have Café de Café, it's always nice, you know, to discover new places and stuff. So next time I'm in Vancouver, it's definitely number one on my list.
Yes, you definitely got to try it out. Okay. One of the things that I also wanted to ask you was, because you are a first-time author and you're a food photographer and you've done all of this incredible stuff, for anyone who like looks to you and is like, wow, I would like to do what she's doing, but I don't really know how to go about it. Like, what's some advice you would give to them?
I think it's really just going for it. I know this is kind of like boring, but just try it out and see where it kind of takes you. Honestly, I never planned out like my journey when I started. I just kind of went day by day, month by month, and seeing the opportunities that would come along the way and kind of built upon that. And definitely, like, you know, if you feel a pull towards photography, go ahead and try it. You know, there's so many free resources online. I never took a photography class. Yeah, ever. So like I learned everything that I know through just like watching YouTube videos and following what the tips that people were sharing online. So it's always, there's always a possibility. And if you do have, you know, extra money, there are tons of courses that you can take. For example, with food blogging, how to optimize your site and all that. There are so many tools out there. I think the biggest thing is really like that first step, you know, like daring to go a little bit further and outside of your comfort zone and trying it out. But I think if you feel the pull, go for it. Just try it. And the worst that can happen, it just doesn't work out. And that's okay, because you will have learned something at least about yourself or a new skill or something.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. Okay. Thank you for that. This is the perfect place to like transition into the rapid fire questions. So five little getting to know you questions. First one being, one time saver in the kitchen you always use.
Okay, so I don't know if this kind of qualifies as one, but I bought an Apple Watch. And one of the main reasons why I bought an Apple Watch is because before this new update on the phone, you were able to have many different timers on the watch. And for me, that has been a time saver, because I don't have to scratch my head and think, oh, how many minutes have passed in, you know, since I put this in the oven or since I did this and that. I just have it on my wrist. Now the new update on the iPhone allows you to do that right off the phone. So I would definitely say if you can use timers to kind of organize your time in the kitchen, it's really, really helpful. And it takes away a lot of the stress that comes with remembering when you put something in, when it's time to check on something. Yeah, timers is a big one for me.
That's amazing. My husband drives me absolutely crazy because he'll be like, oh, I put the pasta in. I was like, but there's no timer. Like, when did you put the pasta in? He's like, I think it was. I was like, how do you, like, I live and die by timers. And even now, like, when you develop recipes, like I'm always timing, like I always throw the timer on because I was like, how long did it take me to get to that stage?
Of
like
course,
I'm always,
yes.
Oh my gosh. So that's actually a really good tip.
Timers are a lifesaver. They're great. And I completely agree with you. Like, especially like for me, when I started developing my cookbook, that's when I really like leaned in like fully, because I had to know like how long it takes to create a recipe, how long these onions have been on the stove for. But outside of that, like I continue to use timers on the daily whenever I cook.
Yeah. I learned that hard lesson with my first book, Eat More Plants, that, you know, every time the copy editor is like, well, how long did this take? And I was like, oh, like going back and making it again because I had no idea. So now we time. Okay. It's Friday. Do you go out, take out, or cook?
Oh, take out, sushi momo.
Right? So I've heard people talk about sushi momo, and now I'm like, I have to go to Montreal and try it.
Yeah, it's a go-to, like sushi momo, and especially on a Friday night. Again, depending on the type of week I've had, like if I've had a week that wasn't too demanding, usually I'll cook. Or it's also when we have like dinners at my mom's place. So like she's kind of in charge of the cooking, so I just bring the dessert. But if, you know, I've had a busy week, I take out for me sushi momo.
What are you watching right now?
Well, I just finished Love is Blind Sweden. not high quality TV, but very entertaining. But I've been meaning to start The Bear season 2 because I love The Bear season 1. I really, really enjoyed it. So it's on my list to watch The Bear season 2.
Yeah. So this is a judgment-free space. All comfort TV and comfort food is welcome here.
Okay.
But yeah,
thank you.
Bear season 2. I watched Bear season 2. And then I loved it so much, I went back and I watched everything again.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I might have to do that this weekend. Just like a little, yeah.
It's so good.
It's a fun.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. One, and you probably already answered this, but one condiment or spice that will make everybody's cooking better?
Tamari.
Okay. Get on the tamari, folks. Okay. Last one. The next place that you want to travel to, money is no object.
my husband and I have been talking about going to the desert for quite some time. I would really love to go back. So we went to California a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic. And Joshua Tree was like one of my favorite places on earth. The sunsets we saw and the sunrises were some of the most beautiful I've ever experienced in my life. And there's just something about the desert and, you know, like the red earth and the big cliffs and the dry air that is just calling my name. So that would be the next one on the list for me.
I love that. That's beautiful. I'm not inherently a desert person, but I would agree that Joshua Tree is so special.
It is, right? And like all these rocks that, oh, it's beautiful. The cacti, everything. It's really another world. Like you can't fully describe them unless you're there. But
I love it. Muriel, thank you so much for joining us on the All Sorts podcast, and congratulations on your beautiful new book, Savoring. I hope everyone who listens picks up a copy. I think it's going to be a really beautiful way to reconnect to the joy of cooking and slowing down and like gathering for a meal. And all the recipes look incredible.
Oh, thank you so much, Desiree. It's been really a pleasure. I mean, I love what you do, and I'm excited for your book and to try your recipes with my philosophy of slowing down and using timers.
Yeah.
It's been really a joy. All the timers.
I hope that today's conversation will remind you every once in a while to exhale and to remember that anything can be an opportunity for mindfulness and pleasure. Yes, even cooking. Something I believe so strongly is that when we seek enjoyment in the small daily tasks, we infinitely increase our ability to truly enjoy our lives. So I hope this sparks a little bit of that in you too. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the All Sorts podcast, which is produced by myself and edited by Brian McCallman. We are grateful to live and work on the unceded and ancestral territory of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. If you love this episode, consider sharing it with someone you love, and be sure to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of the pod. Until next week, friends, be well.